On this reel of Seal of Movies, the boys start off heading back to 1954 and go looking for trouble on the waterfront. Do the boys feel that the movie and Brando's performance live up to expectations? Next, it's a jump to a very dystopian future in The Hunger Games. Does the screen adaptation of the first novel in this very popular trilogy stand up to the Twilight and Battle Royale comparisons? Finally, the boys take a look at the not-so-distant future release of The Rift. Is there any chance that this low-budget sci-fi horror flick can get our interest? All this plus news about a Carrie remake, Kevin Smith making a Clerks play, and Mr. Bay is still defending his Ninja Turtles. All this and more in the 98th reel of CO Movies. May the odds be ever in your favor.
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my tribute co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay.
I'm going to kick your ass, Ray.
I'm going to take you down. I'm going to take you down. Although you've been going to the gym, so you're probably going to take me down.
I'll let you guys just pick the berries anyway. So, with that, let's go into the news.
News on the mark!
Chloe Moretz, officially offered role in Carrie remake.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. That they're remaking Carrie, it's one of those movies that I don't really feel needs a remake or a reboot. Or whatever the hell they want to call it.
With you 100%.
Yeah, Carrie's one of those sort of, I don't know. To me, the imagery in Carrie is one of those things that just sort of burned into my head. So, she's a great actress. I've liked her in most things that she's been in. Obviously, I didn't like Hugo very much, but, I loved her in Kick-Ass and Let Me In, and, although the trailer for Dark Shadows looks horrible, she didn't look bad. I don't know if anybody you guys got to see that during the Hunger Games, but that we sidelined that for another show. I just don't know. I think I don't really care that she's being offered the lead. This is just the first sort of inkling I think I've heard of real traction on this remake.
I'm not a big fan of this remake in particular. Like, same thing, you know. I think it was too classic of a movie,
right,
to really want to try to redo. There wasn't anything wrong. I mean, I realize you don't have to be wrong to do a remake, but I just think it's a bad choice. And she's right. Awful young, and I think she's awful young for. You know, Carrie was like, when you think of Sissy Spacek, you think of she was kind of like a senior in high school-ish,
right? Kind of well, that's what I figured. I don't remember the specifics, but I always remember it being her senior year of high school. So, 15 years old, a little too young.
Yeah. So I'm not falling for it yet.
Yeah, although I suppose they could make her look older. Although, what you do think of, she was a senior in high school, but she did seem sort of younger and out of place compared to the rest of her classmates because of her mother.
Stunted.
Yeah.
Is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm not a fan of this remake.
Yeah. Any thoughts there, Jeff?
Honestly, I've never seen Carrie, so.
Wow.
Okay. You will soon enough.
List. Probably October, right? Anyway.
Oh, we don't have to wait for October.
You can watch it anytime. We can watch it anytime.
It's versatile.
I don't know. Just the shot that they had of her in the article made me think, yeah, I can see Carrie in that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they picked that shot just for that, you know. In fact, the article ends with, hey, if all goes well, she'll be drenched in blood all over again. So, you know, a pretty famous scene in Carrie that they're trying to evoke memories of, which, yeah, I can see that in that little snippet. No.
With that...
No remake.
With that, Kevin Smith wants to make Clerks 3 a play?
Now, this is one I'm actually sort of very interested in, and mainly because I really, really, really agree with something that this article mentions. So basically, Kevin Smith, you know, who sort of, you know, made his mark in film with the first Clerks, which he put himself into credit card debt and, you know, financed himself and got it out there. And there's a little bit of, well, I don't know if I would say controversy, but Clerks 2 is sort of one of those polarizing films. It's one of those, like, either you really like it or you I find that people don't get it. I think that's one of the things
that, you know, I have actually haven't seen Clerks 2.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't like Clerks.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Although, I'm trying to think of when Clerks came out. It may have been because I really identified with sort of the age group around the time that Clerks came out, because, you know, it was very close in age to Kevin Smith and the characters in that film. And then again, when you go to Clerks 2, which is sort of a look at, hey, here's all these characters and what they've done with their lives since Clerks, and sort of the struggles to sort of come to terms with, you know, the choices they've made and the things that they're planning to do with the rest of their life, very much sort of hit home, I think, because, again, same sort of age range as the characters, and, you know, making that same sort of, you know, realizations in your life. Like, when you finally have that sort of conversation with yourself as to, like, okay, is this, like, what the rest of my life is going to be like? Like,
right.
Is this is where I'm going to, you know, coast out with right now, you know?
Very reality bites. Very reality bites, kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this Clerks 3 thing, one of the things that I think is pretty awesome is one of the things Smith is really known for is he's usually not a very visual person. He's very character oriented, very dialogue oriented, especially, you know, so I could totally see, you know, him writing some material and turning it into a play and having it work rather well. You know,
mm-hmm. Agreed.
I could get into that.
You could take a movie like Clerks and very easily turn it into a play. You know, limited sets, not a whole lot of characters. The way you can set it up with people coming and going in and out of the store, I mean, it'd be very, very easily turned into a play. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting idea, and I'd be interested to see what he does with it. He wants it to go by. He wants to launch it by the end of 2014. So,
yeah. I could see that. I could totally see, you know, I could totally see it working.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of where would he want to go with it. Like, is this something that he would see himself doing on Broadway? On, you know, that's the thing I would wonder.
Well, that's what, I mean, it says, if you've been following Smith's Twitter account, you'll know that he's become obsessed with the Book of Mormon, which I'm assuming is a play.
Yes,
well, it's done by the guys who did South Park.
South Park. By the South Park guys.
And because of that, he's been inspired to possibly do Clerks 3 as a 6-month limited run Broadway play.
Oh.
So, yeah. Okay. So he definitely wants to bring it to Broadway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Fair enough.
Moving on. Mr. Bay is still defending the Ninja Turtles.
The story that just won't go away.
Ever.
Yeah, just when you thought it was safe to not talk about Ninja Turtles, Mr. Bay, I guess, took to some sort of blog or website or something and basically said this, because they were trying to, like, question him about, like, why are we calling it Ninja Turtles and not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, even though he sort of explained why. But he says, and it, I find this kind of funny because I find this is sort of like he's explaining it, but it also seems like he's trying to deflect, like, it's not me, you know, because he's the producer, you know, he's not the director, and he does have a lot of influence on where the movie's going, but he's basically deflecting on this one. He's got his bullet proof wristbands on, and Paramount Marketing changed the name. They made the title simple. The characters you remember are exactly the same, and yes, they still act like teenagers. Everything you remember, why you like the characters, is in the movie. The script is being developed by two very smart writers with one of the original creators of Ninja Turtles. They care very much about making this film for the fans. Everyone on this team cares about the fans. Just give them a chance. Jonathan, director, is a major fan of the whole franchise, and I love this in all caps, he's not going to let you down. So, when's the last time, can you guys remember a time when, like, there was this much sort of arguing and defending of a movie that's not even been, I don't even think they've done any principal photography for this, right? It's still all in pre-production.
I know, right?
Right.
I don't know. I think he got set up by Transformers. I mean, right. Come on. When you take a franchise, you know, when you have a franchise like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Jeff.
No, here's the thing is, he keeps saying we're doing it for the fans, but the fans are pissed.
Yeah.
So, are you really doing it for the fans?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately, I mean, when you're taking a franchise like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if you don't have in the back of your mind that you're going to be doing this, that there's this built-in fan base, you know, that's going to be judging your film, you know, with a very, very critical eye. I mean, that's very naive. So.
Yeah.
What else can he say but that, you know, no, we're not doing this for the people who actually like the Mutant Ninja Turtles. We're going for somebody new, or, you know, we're just going to totally ignore you.
We're bringing it to a new audience.
We've
heard that before.
I really would have liked to. He probably would have should have not said we're doing it for the fans. He should have said, look, we wanted to do the Ninja Turtles, and at this point, we wanted to take a different look at them in a different way. So we're trying that out. I think that the fans of the previous versions of the things will really like that, like what we have to offer. But it's not saying we're doing it for the fans, because if they're doing it for the fans, one, they would go back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not Teenage Alien Ninja Turtles. And
yeah, I think you answered
this whole alien thing, they needed to go away.
Yeah.
But he can't say he's doing it for the fans because the fans are pissed.
No. So
yeah, I think you just answered the point there too, though, that last time he did an update, he pissed everybody off.
Right.
You know, so he's got to appease the fans.
Right.
So now he's trying to come back and say whatever he can to come off of that, you know, the douche he looked like last time by trying to be all.
He's looking like a complete douche right now.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right. But it's Michael Bay. he shits on of our memories.
So I'm just curious, because, you know, I kind of laugh because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one of those things where it's like, I like the franchise. I especially liked the comic that it, you know, everything was based on. I never really watched too much of the cartoon or any of that stuff. I saw the movies when they came out, but, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, okay, it's cool, whatever. I'm not a 12-year-old kid, so I wasn't really in their target demographic. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, I can understand, like, you know, the the fans being up in arms. And, you know, obviously I was a Transformers fan and, you know, was not very happy with his interpretation of that franchise. I still saw every stinking movie.
Yep.
Every stupid one. And yep. My nephew, who is the biggest Ninja Turtles fan that I personally know, I asked him, you know, as soon as I saw this, I'm like, what do you think of all of this? And he's just like, me and my friend, we're so pissed. We're so mad, but we're still going to go see it.
Yeah, I'm probably
still. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so it really doesn't matter. He can make the worst movie ever, and everyone's still going to go see it. So in a way, he is still sort of making it for the fans. They're all going to go see it.
No, he's making it for the money from the fans.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It'll still make the money because everybody's going to go see it so that they can all tell each other like how bad it was.
Right, it's going to turn into G.I. Joe. It's a horrible movie that's going to make a whole lot of money, and they're going to make another one.
Yep. It's the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should protest it.
maybe he's onto something. Let's, you know, what's another franchise that we can remake that will piss people off?
He-Man.
We could do He-Man. A lot of people
I think, like, better.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that
do what?
Would really love. There's a lot of people that would really love to see He-Man get remade because the original He-Man live action movie, a lot of people thought that was an abortion.
Bad.
Yeah. It was classic.
It was classic.
It is bad, but I love it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
I'm trying to think, you know what? And the first thing that pops into my head is, and I know it'll never happen in a million years, but I would love to see him redo Star Wars.
I don't
Michael
know if
Bay.
He
would be
his choice.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I would go see his try. I'd probably see his try. I mean, he's good with the explosion, so you know, he might come up with something good. Will it be better? Probably not.
Yeah.
Oh God, no. I'm thinking maybe let's give him Silverhawks. Throw him a bone.
Yeah.
Or the live action. You know what? Michael Bay might actually do an interesting live action Battle of the Planets, G-Force, Gotcha Man.
Whatever.
Thing, which is just,
I'm sure he'll put it all in a blender and mix it all together and you'll get some
crazy. But I think he would have an interesting interpretation of that. I'd let that happen.
The Power Rangers, as you said?
Yeah. I think that would be hilarious.
He could do that. I could see that.
You know what, though? I don't even care if it's him. I would love to see somebody do a serious version of the Power Rangers and stuff. I mean, I know that's part of its thing, like
the campy
special effects and the campiness and the. I know that's part, but I would love to see somebody actually go, like, you know what? I'm going to take this and make it into a real serious movie.
Maybe like leather armor instead of spandex, and instead of a helmet, it's some sort of stylized mask or something like that.
Well, that could be. That's, you know, in my opinion, that is Gotcha Man or Battle of the Planets or.
Right, exactly.
You know. I mean, the different powers, but.
Right.
Same concept. Transmute.
I don't know. Who knows? But. Let's actually go right in. Let's get into the movie.
You're telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
I want to rip my sinuses out with a spoon. In any case, on the waterfront, 1954, Rotten Tomatoes rating of 100% fresh, 94% audience. Directed by Elia Kazan. And starring Marlon Brando, Charles Maldon, Lee Cobb, and Eva Marie Saint.
Yeah, Carl Maldon, you mean?
This is the movie, which has I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like every time I hear somebody say that line, they always are doing the. They're basically taking the Marlon Brando from The Godfather. voice.
Right.
Saying that raging line. Yeah. Raging bullish. Yeah.
But when you see the movies, it's like just regular, plain, ordinary Marlon Brando. Much better voice.
Could have been. You know what? I will say this, though. Marlon Brando's voice in this movie drove me crazy. I couldn't figure out what the hell sort of accent he was trying to go for because it kept changing. And it was like, ugh. Because sometimes he would talk like he had a mouthful of cotton. Sometimes he talked normal. Sometimes he talked with sort of like a New York accent. It was just this weird sort of amalgamation of things. And I don't know if I'm the only one else who noticed this, but his like eyelids and eyebrows kept changing through the movie. Like,
oh, I know. I guess I never noticed that.
And he's the thing is, he sounded like Marlon Brando to me.
Like, you know,
how
honestly,
many Marlon Brando movies have you seen?
Not a lot. Uh-huh. Not a lot.
So we need to put on Guys and Dolls on the list. Because
mm-hmm.
that's one of the ones I think. And it's pretty much any time in that age of his career, that's how right. he talked. Like, period. Like, that's not us. He wasn't doing an accent necessarily or anything. That was just Marlon Brando.
Right. But what I'm trying to understand, though, and what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, there's this whole sort of mythos around him. Like, he's considered, like, one of the best actors of all time because right. of that. You know, he's, like, one of the, as far as I know, like, he's the first person I ever remember them talking about, like, method acting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
really putting himself in the characters. And
yeah. I mean, I just told Jeff, I'm not that up on all of Marlon Brando's roles. I mean, I probably could, including this one, I mean, I'm like, okay, I know I've seen him in this. I know I've seen him in The Godfather. I'm like, what other major movies would I have seen him in that I might have seen? I never saw.
Well, Raging Bull.
The Island of Dr. Moreau.
No, never saw that. Not the original, anyway.
Apocalypse Now.
Nope. Never saw.
You ever seen Apocalypse Now?
No.
That's a good movie.
Well, he was Jor-El.
Yeah, well, yeah, Superman. But he was so not in that movie. I don't even count that. He was a name to get people to come in and see that.
We need to show you Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut.
I own it.
He was in there quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't remember him being in there much more than
in Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut.
Yeah.
This is like the alternate to what the theatrical cut.
Yeah, I know.
Most of the talking that Superman does is to Jor-El.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess it's hard for me to consider. I don't know. I guess you could say yes, he's
a Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah,
Stella!
And it's another one of those movies where it's like, you know, it's one of those classic films that everybody talks about, and it's an old one, so there's a good chance that I've never seen it. But, you know, I guess when I'm watching it, because I'm like, I'm expected to be like blown away by his, you know, performance. And I was just kind of like, okay.
Same thing with me. You're thinking exactly how I was thinking with this. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, when I go to see this movie, you know, I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be this amazing AFI movie. Da, 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 da. And right. I think it's just a generation. It must be a generational thing because a lot of these AFI movies we've been watching, I'm not really into.
Right.
You know, I think it's just what we've been programmed to like. You know, and the style of acting and the style of,
well,
of shooting. And
sometimes I wonder if it's a little bit of that and it's a little bit of, say, like, all right, we go way back in time here to talk about when we talked about Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, another, it's like, oh, my God, it's supposed to be like the best movie ever made. You know, and so I watch it and I go, I don't really get why this movie is so supposed to be so phenomenal. Like, I don't see it doing anything, you know, out of the ordinary for me, from my perspective. Right. But then when I go back and research it, it's like, but there'd been no movies that are made like this. And they did all these different things that nobody had ever done before. And then I'm kind of like, oh, well, if I'm looking at it from the perspective of somebody who'd never seen any of those things before, then yes, I could see why it made such an impression. And I wonder sometimes if, because I've seen so many movies that have taken these classic movies and used what made them so popular, and it just sort of become, I don't even know if I want to say old hat, but it's not from our perspective, right, having seen all these other things that have done things or ripped them off or used them as inspiration, that when we watch them, we don't go, it doesn't have the impact that it had, you know.
That's fair.
So I don't know if that's what it is. And the other big problem that I had, and this was another one sort of like Gone with the Wind, where I had to turn the subtitles on, because a lot of times I had no idea what they were talking about. It was like they were speaking another language. The slang that they are using in this, yeah. I was like, it's one. I almost wish that I was reading this instead of watching it, because, you know, like on a Kindle or something, you can like look up definitions of things and go like, because they used a lot of slang that I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, I was like, oh, okay, I think I know what that means, but yeah, I think that was a problem. The standout performer in this for me and was Carl Malden. I thought he did a phenomenal job in the little screen time that he had as the priest. I was actually, I think, more interested in that character than Marlon Brando's character, you know.
I think that's fair. He is one that I remember even. I think he's one that I definitely remember even better than Brando's character.
Well, there were two different types of characters. Father Barry was trying to get out there. He was trying to be loud and right. Teach and preach and help the dock workers. While Terry was like, look, I'm just working here. I'm just doing my thing. Leave me alone. I just want to be another guy. Okay.
Right.
He's not trying to get out there. So right. That's probably why Carl Malden's performance reaches out to you, because, you know, he's that loud father trying to help a flock. Mm. But I agree with you though.
Well, plus the thing about Carl Malden's one of those guys, like, even though, you know, he got older as time went on, he's got such a recognizable face to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know him. Like, he was, like, the one from the – like, yes, I know who Marlon Brando is. I know what he looks like. But I haven't seen a whole lot of things with Marlon Brando in it, so I'm not familiar with him. So I had this sort of familiarity with the actor that I think I helped sort of ingratiate me to him. Mm-hmm. So – that helped, but I
good word.
I struggled with this. I literally struggled with this. I took me 3 days to watch this movie. I started watching it the first day, and I think I made it about 30 minutes in, and I fell asleep. And I woke up, and it was still playing, and I went, you know what? I gotta finish this tomorrow. So. I had a really crazy day at work the next day. I came home, started watching it, and I skipped the first 30 minutes or whatever and started off where I left off. And I got about another 25, 30 minutes into it and was like, I'm going to fall asleep again if I keep watching this. So I'm like, I will just I'm going to have to, you know, do my best to watch mm-hmm. it. So I get home from work today. And I pop it in, and I'm like, I'm going to watch this thing because I got to talk about it today. Here's my motivation. I got to watch this. So I get about 5 minutes past where I watched it yesterday, and my disc freezes.
No.
So then I pull the disc out from Netflix, and it's like got this horrendous, horrendous scratch on it that it's like, I'm like, this disc is not going to play in anything I put it in. So then I had to scramble and like ended up having to find an alternate source of the movie. And finally finished watching it. But yeah, I literally struggled to watch this movie. I'm lucky I got it in before the end of today.
Well, I started watching it, then I realized I wasn't watching it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was one of those kind of nights.
I've been there.
And then I was like, let me watch Clash of the Titans. And then I went back to watching it.
I was the only one who could easily watch this the entire way through just fine.
Well, I think it's probably because it was very play-like. Again, like other movies from that genre or that time frame.
Yeah, I didn't really have any problems. The only problems, quote-unquote, I had was I was trying to clean my kitchen while I was watching it. But then I started it over, watched the beginning again, but it was more because I was doing stuff. I was like paying full attention, but eventually I got sat down and watched the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, the ultimate issue was the stylization.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've just come to learn. Sorry, everybody out there who might hate me for saying this, but I just think I've come to learn. I don't like that black and white, stylized type of acting.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
Yeah. I think I actually, what I came to realize when I finally got done watching it was that I really enjoyed any of the interaction between Brando and Eva Marie Saint. Like, I enjoyed watching those two characters sort of interact. I enjoyed watching her sort of experience things for the first time, and I think she did a really good job. In fact, I added her. I know that, Jeff, you just copy and paste whatever's on IMDb as far as the actors listening.
Oh, yeah.
I specifically put her on here. One thing is because I guess the producers or whatever, after the film had wrapped, they were going to sort of give her a title role and list her in the main credits, but then they decided to basically cut back on that only because they thought her performance was so good that she would probably get an Academy Award for it. But if they had put her as the a title character and given her a title role, that she would have never gotten Best Actress. So they're like, we're gonna give you a supporting, list you as a supporting character, because then if you get nominated for Best Supporting Actress, we think you'll get it. And that's actually what happened. So good on her for what she did. I thought she did a very good performance myself.
Cool.
Mm. And I think, there he is.
Right.
Were you muted?
Yeah, I was. I had forgot something that to put in the doc, so I was typing that and I muted myself. What was?
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
well, I will say I liked the mafia movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. Always been a fan of the mafia movie. So I liked it when it was going in that direction and all that kind of stuff, especially from the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely it started off with a lot of promise for me. Mm-hmm. It didn't go all the way.
Didn't hit a home run?
Mm-hmm. No, unfortunately.
Well, here's what we've learned from On the Waterfront. Keep quiet. Don't ask no questions. Don't give no answers. So basically ask questions, give answers. And you'll live longer. Stooling is where you rat on your friends. Pigeons aren't peaceful, but they are faithful. And if you're going to scrap your whole life, might as well get paid for it. And that is what we've learned from On the Waterfront. I think this is a pretty good classic movie. It's still 1950s style acting, but I enjoyed it. I say at least give it a chance.
Yeah, like I said, it was a real struggle for me to get through this. I found the scenes between Brando and Saint entertaining. And the last 20 minutes or so of the movie I thought were really good. There's some real conflict and stuff going on there. But I had a hard time getting into this movie. In my mind, it would have been more interesting to follow Carl Malden's character around instead of Brando.
Yeah, I totally agree. I definitely struggled through it. I found it interesting, especially because I tend to like the mafia movie type stuff, but it was so stylized, it just drug for me. Mm. I couldn't get into it.
Right.
With that, let's go into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The Hunger Games. 85% rotten, 80s, or actually, that should be fresh. Excuse me. 85% fresh, 87% audience, directed by Gary Ross, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth. And then, of course, you've got like Woody Harrelson and Lenny Kravitz. Lenny Kravitz. Mm-hmm. Now, talk to you about Lenny Kravitz. I think there have been some people who are a little upset about Lenny Kravitz. And I'm like, what? He's one of my favorite characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. What about you, Cena? Yeah.
Yep.
Also, other highlights include Stanley Tucci and Donald Sutherland. So I didn't have them specifically on the list. I just, again, copy and paste from IMDb.
Yeah, that's okay. The first thing is, obviously, this movie's been getting a lot of buzz and a lot of attention, especially now that it's come out. I'm sure you guys have seen some of the stories that there are a lot of people that are sort of disappointed, and that's me being very nice about it, that particular characters are cast as African Americans. First off, I'll say you people are stupid. It is actually, other than, I will give them Cinna, but it does say in the book that the particular characters that they're upset about are dark-skinned. The author who also co-wrote the screenplay for the movie has come out and said, look, these characters are exactly the way they need to be. This is how I intended them to be from the time I wrote it. It says it in the books. Get over it. But I was really shocked at the amount of sort of
stupidity,
you know, stupidity and racism that was just like flowing out of people's mouths on Twitter, especially. I was like, oh my God. But
I completely concur.
As I was talking to a couple friends on Facebook about this, because and I've never done this before. Thursday night before the movie came out last Friday, I bought the book and started reading it. And I managed to read it before I saw the movie Saturday. Mm-hmm. It is a very it's not a very long book. It's about 390-some pages. It's a very easy read. So I highly recommend it if anybody's looking for a good book to read. So I talked to some friends. I'm like, you know what? When I read the book, I don't think I even really paid attention too much to the descriptions of the characters, especially their skin tone. I'm like, I didn't even remember really focusing in on that. And then, although I do remember focusing on the fact that they said that Thresh was built like an ox, so that sort of got my mind going a bit. So I did focus on that. But yeah, I was just really, really, really disappointed with some of these people and the things they were saying. But Steven, you did not read, correct?
I have not read the book, no.
Okay.
But I did read the comments because I saw a bunch of those articles going around too, and I just thought that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes down to you know, interpretation. Like, it's like, I guess in some ways it's just like, what if Harry Potter had been black? Imagine what the world would have said. You know, like,
right.
I don't know. It just is. It doesn't even matter. And even when the author is like, hello, people, read what the book's words are, der.
Right. Right, right.
I mean, the only thing that could have changed it is if she had just put in there, like, is a shy African-American. But
right.
The whole point of it is that, you know, it's a different world. It's a different country. It's a different, you know, Panem is not the United States. So they might not have even used those words. So she chose to use different words. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I don't want to get all I don't want to get all alpha nerd on you. What I got from the author, from her sort of defense of what they did in the movie, was the fact that she tried to say was because the book takes place in the future, an undisclosed amount of time, but we're all sort of guessing it's around 300 years in the future. And it is North America that it takes place on.
Right. Right.
That because of it being so far in the future, and that the possibilities of there been a whole lot of more, you know, mixture of the races together, that's right. Why she didn't really specify that, you know, this person was one particular race or the other, just that this particular person is olive skinned and this person is dark skinned, and sort of really left it up to the reader's imaginations to sort of fill in the blanks. If anything, though, the character that I sort of was taken aback by the most, actually, and didn't really fit what my mind's eye had chiseled out for them was Woody Harrelson, actually. He sort of totally took me by surprise as Haymitch, although he ended up sort of bringing me over to his side, I think, by the end of the movie.
Right.
And it's one of those things where, like, now that, you know, I read the first book before I saw the movie, and I am now on the third book. But ever since I saw the movie, of course, now when I read these characters, their images on the screen have now taken the place of whatever images I had in my head.
Right.
You know, so now I'm seeing Woody Harrelson as the character in my head, and I'm seeing, you know, so, and it's like, whatever, I'm okay with it. Doesn't, you know. It's not taking me out of the, unless the only time it becomes an issue is if they describe something in the books that didn't directly up in opposition of what I saw on the screen, then that's right. The only time I have an issue, but yeah, no issue.
And well, and Woody Harrelson, let's talk about him for a second. Mm-hmm. He was such a burnout. It was such a burnout. Like, I totally saw Wilson playing Woody Harrelson. I think he's turning into the next phase of Nick Cage.
Okay.
Woody Harrelson plays himself. And exactly what I would think he would be like.
Yeah, well, I know he got a lot of... I'm glad that he was different enough that he wasn't getting a lot of Tallahassee comparisons.
True.
From Zombieland. You know, because... True. That I could totally have seen that, especially with that type of character, it would have been easy to fall into that sort of thing, because he had that sort of, you know, Tallahassee-ish twang and sort of attitude. But the character in the books is very much a drunk. You know, they actually cut a scene out. They changed the introduction to that character is at the reaping when their names are being pulled and read. He comes out on stage and proceeds to actually come out on stage and fall off the stage because he's drunk. So,
gotcha.
He's much more of a mess actually in the books than he is in the movie. And as far as other changes from the book, there's very few changes really. They changed a couple things. They sort of omitted things. The biggest change, obviously, is that the books are all told from the perspective of Katniss. So if she wasn't there to see it, it's not in the book. So all that stuff that you see behind the scenes with Donald Sutherland and the Game Master, and when you see Haymitch is trying to talk to sponsors, and the right. newscast sort of things that are going on, you know, none of that is in the book, because you only see what she sees. So when she's in the arena, that's all the book is about. You're in the arena the whole time from her perspective. She doesn't know what's going on outside. So that is different, and that's a little bit of a switch. I do like the fact that they use the announcers to sort of help explain some things, you know, because obviously yeah. when you're in her head, she just thinks to herself about like the WASPs, the hacker jackers, like, or tracker jackers. She knows what they are. Yeah. You know, so she explains it to you while you're reading the book, where obviously they can't do that in the movie. So they have the announcers go, "Ooh, what are those?" You know, and sort of answer those questions for the audience that may or may not know. And there are a few other little minor changes that they, but I think they did it mainly because they didn't want to have to introduce a bunch of characters that were in the books that weren't in the movie. The biggest thing that I felt they changed that I didn't like was that you didn't get to spend a lot of time with Katniss before the game started, where you do get to learn a lot more about her and her family and her history and her relationship with her father before she goes in. So you get a lot more of that, where they just kind of alluded to a lot of it with flashbacks in the movie.
Yeah.
As somebody who did not read the books, were you confused by anything, or were you able to pretty much figure everything out?
I followed it pretty easily.
Yeah.
I mean, I fell into the movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty unanimous. Everyone I've asked that's seen it has enjoyed it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I just went right along with it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I definitely got what it was trying to put out there. My only concern was that I didn't care for like the last 5 minutes of the movie. There was so mm-hmm. much more I wanted to go, but again, I haven't read the books and I don't know how that's going to, play mm-hmm. out. But I really could have cared less for the lovey-dovey ending.
Well, I see. Here's the thing that they did change a little bit. Well, it's not that they changed it, but they omitted a significant portion at the end where, again, it's a part of their thing with the whole tonal shift, from being in Katniss's head to obviously being an observer, because you know what she's thinking in the books, you know, her mood, she goes from believing that Peter is not a threat at all to her, you know, when they first get chosen, to then her sort of questioning because he says some things and does some things that makes her think,
right,
well, wow, maybe he's a smart guy and he's really just playing me and I really don't trust him.
Yeah, in the movie, Woody Harrelson and Effie are the ones who make that clear to her.
Right.
Notice that? Because you can't read her mind. But he's like, oh, he's smart. He's playing the game, you know, and then all of a sudden you see her go,
Right. What happens at the end of the novel is that on their way back, on the train, they stop for fuel. So they both get off the train and they take a walk. And basically that's when Katniss confesses that she doesn't have the same feelings for him.
Gaia.
That he does for her. So she actually confesses that to him and he gets upset about it. And it basically comes out that everything that happened in the arena was sort of planned or not planned, but what she figured was the best way for her to survive and get through.
Right.
Because the last line in the book is when they finally get back on the train, they make it to District 12. And they both sort of look at each other and say, you know, one more time for the camera. And that's when they grab hands and they walk off the train together. Because what basically comes out is they say, you know, you have to keep up this image of the two of you being these in love with each other. Because if they find out that you are lying about it and it's not true, then
they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit, and they brought in some things into this that were sort of talked about in the next book, and I don't know if they did that because they didn't know if there's going to be a sequel. I guess what they said officially was that we weren't planning just to make all of them. It really depends on how well the movie does, and obviously the movie's doing extremely well, so I think there's probably a good chance we'll see a sequel.
When the movie is very much a single episode, so if they didn't choose to go into any others, it really doesn't matter. It's not like they really give us a cliffhanger or anything.
It's actually one of the reasons why I started reading the second book, because I was kind of like, I wanted to know where they were going to go. Like, what could they do in another book? You know?
Well, all of them are downloaded on my Kindle app for my iPad, so
yeah,
I'll probably be checking that out.
Yeah, they're very easy reads. And then, I have seen one Twilight. I've not seen any more than one Twilight. And I have not seen Battle Royale. I know I'm losing geek points for not have seen that movie.
I haven't seen Battle Royale either.
Yeah, what about you, Steven?
I want to see that. Mm-hmm. And you get that on the list. That's what we should have had for our past movie.
Yeah, well, should have. You know, hindsight's 20/20, right? But anyway, this movie keeps getting compared to Battle Royale. And for people who do not know Battle Royale,
the anime?
No,
there's actually a movie. It's the Battle Royale movie.
Oh.
So
I saw a couple of scenes which involved the teacher who was explaining that his class was going to be in it talking. He threw a knife into one of the students' head. And he says, oh, that's right, I'm not supposed to kill anybody. And then later on, some guy makes a fuss about the collars that they're wearing that can explode, and they tried to calm him down, stop him from freaking out, but he doesn't. So what does he do? He activates the collar, and his head explodes.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a very interesting movie to me.
There's been a lot of comparisons. There's actually been some controversy saying that this is a ripoff of Battle Royale. You know, and the author said, she's like, I'd never even seen Battle Royale when I wrote this book, you know, like, if it's a copy, my bad, you know.
This seems very different from Battle Royale.
Here's what the description for it, the quick version of it is. Blah, blah, blah. When school children begin to abuse the system, okay, mm-hmm. On the verge of social collapse, the Japanese government introduces a strict new punishment whereby random children are taken to a deserted island and forced to fight each other to the death.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the second one is like 3 years later, blah, blah, blah.
So basically what I've gotten, because I have some friends that have seen both, and the best way that I've heard it compared is that, yes, they are similar. They have a similar premise. Yes, you have teenagers that are all in an arena or some sort of confined space where they have to kill each other. But the main difference between something like Battle Royale and the Hunger Games is that Battle Royale doesn't have any one particular character that story is being told. So there is no like main protagonist that you can sort of identify with and get attached to. It's very much all about the spectacle of the actual fighting and what's going on. Whereas this, you get much more in the head of the main character, especially in the book, you're much more in the head of the main character. And so you're sort of experiencing everything through her, and there's a story, an actual story of hers that's being told. So it's a little more intimate. So that is the easiest way I could say it's different. And then Twilight, anybody who's comparing this to Twilight, you can just go jump off a cliff or something, because
yeah, this is nothing like Twilight.
Because I always say, well, so this is for people who don't, this is for Twilight people who don't like vampires. And it's like, no, I'm like, Twilight is about a girl who falls in love and can't make her own decisions and needs everybody to protect her and can't make up her mind. The Hunger Games is very much about a very strong female protagonist who does what she needs to do to survive and help her family. So to me, there's really no comparison, other than maybe a little bit of the girl torn between two boys thing, because there is a little bit of that in the Hunger Games where she's kind of in love with one person and not sure if she's in love with another person or starts to develop. So there's a little bit of that in there, but not enough for me to say it warrants comparison to the movie. So,
right.
So yeah, the only thing that really drove me nuts with this movie, shaky cam. Ugh.
Yeah, it did come, and it came up every once in a while, and it was just like, what the frick?
Yeah, well, we were wondering if, especially during the fight scenes, if it was an attempt to not have to be very graphic, like with the camera moving around, they're not really showing some things that are going on, so, you know, we can make this PG-13.
could be.
Yeah, so...
I did think though that the fight scenes were well done in this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was actually very visually good too. And that the weirder part of this whole thing is, I was in a rush to go see this.
Mm-hmm.
Not today. I didn't go see it today, but I had to try to get it in this weekend because of the way this week was looking, and so I had to go try to figure out how I was going to do it. And I ended up going to see this at the drive-in.
Okay.
Which I know I see several movies at the drive-in because it's kind of fun, but I didn't think that the quality would be as good. And actually, the picture was actually pretty good at the drive-in, surprisingly enough. Nice. So I can only imagine what it would be like in the actual theater. So, you know,
yeah.
I went to the Slaughter Lane Alamo for this one too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think part of my problem was too that we got, like, we were in an unfamiliar part of town when we decided we were going to go see this. So I was trying to find a theater, and like by the time I found a theater, the show was like going to start in like 5 minutes.
Eep.
So there was like a lot of people in the theater, and we ended up sitting like in like the fifth or sixth row. You know, so we were really close to the screen, and it was like, whoa, shaky cam. Whoa.
Yeah, I was closer to the back.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, I definitely recognize the shaky cam. You know, you're saying, I was like, oh, why? It didn't make sense because it just kind of came out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Consistency is one thing, you know. It's like when you don't do anything else in shaky cam, like, why are you suddenly doing it? You know, doesn't make any sense. But then there's the movies like Cloverfield and Battle Los Angeles, which were all shaky cam.
Mm-hmm.
And make you vomit the entire time. So
so are either you guys excited for sequel? Like, do we want sequel? Do we care? Not care?
I would just want the sequel to be more of this. Mm-hmm. I don't think the sequel's going to be this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want the sequel. I liked this movie because of what happened in it. You know, like, what are they going to do? Grab the two of them and throw them back in the dome and make them kill each other? You know what I mean? Like, I doubt that that's going to happen. You know, or, you know, oh, well, you guys, we're going to change the rules again and make you have to fight again next year. You know, I mean, that's what I liked about this was the American Gladiator stuff, you know, and the stuff. And I don't think that that's what the next one's going to be. So I really could care less if it's going to end up being a love story or them having to defend they love each other for the next 2 hours.
Okay. But,
you know.
It's called Catching Fire, so that's what it's on there. In there, and only Ray knows. But I mean, it's one of those things where I'm really kind of nonchalant about it because, as I said, this movie is a standalone movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing to lead me to expect there are more books. Like, I actually was like, well, is this a truncated? I know it was like a trilogy or something. Is this a truncated version of the entire thing? Or is there a cutoff where the book ends and we need to see what the next one is or what was going on? So I didn't know what was going to happen for that. And then after seeing the movie, I'm like, oh, okay, they told the story, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
If they continue with this and whatever, you know, book two is like, I'd definitely go see it if it's more essentially more of Katniss and whatever. But
it's definitely more of Katniss. I will give you that.
So I really like that. Now, speaking of Katniss, I forgot to put this in the talking points, but there were some people, or at least I heard on the morning stream, at least some people were saying that Jennifer Lawrence was too fat for Katniss.
Well, the part of the thing, well, there's a reason that they're saying that. Because one of the things about the people in District 12 is that a lot of them are starving to death.
Right.
Although the reason why Katniss is so good at what she's able to do is that her father taught her to hunt. So when her father died, she took over the job of hunting. So her family very rarely ever goes without food. So technically she should be a little bigger than the other people in her district. So,
because she's able to fend for herself,
right?
Which is also another reason why she jumped up and took over for her sister,
right? Because, well, they talk much more in the book about how she tried to bring her sister out into the woods and teach her how to hunt, and her sister was absolutely horrible at it. So she knows that, like, she didn't have any faith that her sister would have any chance of surviving. So that's why she just, you know, volunteered. I volunteered. There's no way that she's going to make it. So, yeah.
I don't understand why people... this is just making me want to smack some geeks upside the head.
What's that?
Just that she's... that, you know, they shouldn't be black, and now she's too fat.
Too fat?
She's just... I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, but really? You'll get that any time that you have a, especially when, and maybe I'm stereotyping now, but I think especially when you have a science fiction novel being made into a movie, you're gonna get some ultra stupid criticisms of, you know, this wasn't exactly like it was in the book.
I can take it when it's like Optimus Prime doesn't look like I thought it was, you know, or I can take it that the costume on, you know, Spider-Man looks, you know, goofy, you know, or whatever. I don't mind that kind of stuff. But now they're like, you know, but now they're down to, you know, that I didn't, you know, or when I go to the Broadway and I've seen a blonde Maureen in Rent.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, and everybody's like, oh my god, a blonde Maureen? She can't be blonde. Idina Menzel, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, oh my god, it's a casting choice. You know, I mean, that kind of, I get it.
Yeah.
But when they're talking about, you know, right down to being racist and too fat. And, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is not fat.
No, she's not
Jesus Christ, she's not fat.
I didn't have any problems with their casting choices, really, other than like a little bit. It took me a little while to get used to Woody Harrelson. I had more issues with, I was trying to figure out why they changed certain things. Like, she gets the Mockingjay pin differently in the movie than she did in the book. So I was like, why did they change that? That seems like such a weird, arbitrary thing to change. The other sort of major change they made was that the creatures at the end of the fight, the dogs, they're much more werewolf-like in the book. They walk. They have the ability to walk on their hind legs, and they also have they are basically the reanimated corpses of the people who have died in the arena. So they sort of look like the people that they were. Like, they have the same eyes, and you can tell by their body structure that this one is this person, and this one is Glimmer, and this one is Foxface, and
gotcha. That would have been cool if they had been zombie
zombie werewolves.
That's so cool.
Well, I'm sure there wouldn't be actual zombies. They're just holograms or however
they created the zombies.
Right, but they talk very much in the books about how good the capital is at genetic engineering. So they somehow use the DNA or something of the dead combatants to generate these werewolf-like creatures, which are very real. They're not holograms. So,
well, that's why I always thought it was like the holographic technology was so good that it almost recreated anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the dome was able to work so well.
Mm-hmm.
No, I read. Well, one of the things I did do as I was in the car, since I could do this, is I did look at Wikipedia a little bit to try to mm-hmm. follow stuff. mm-hmm. And so I did read that they were, you know, the mutts or mutations or mutations or whatever they call them.
We were debating how that was supposed to be pronounced.
I guess it was mutations.
Yeah. This was be like mutts.
Yeah. You know, I thought that was interesting, but I like that concept better. They must have had a hard time trying to figure out how to make that work. But I like the concept of them using the DNA of the.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they should have risen up as zombies and started attacking them. Yeah, exactly.
Well, see, though, one of the things that they really didn't have at all in the. In the movie was they talk about a lot about how quickly the bodies were collected. Like as soon as people moved out of range, a hovercraft would come in and basically scoop the dead person out and carry them off. So they weren't like allowed to sit, like lay there and rot. They just, as soon as they were dead and the other tributes moved far enough away, the hovercrafts would fly in and scoop them up. So I don't even really think they showed that at all in the movie. Yeah.
Nope.
Very Logan's Run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep.
Oh, and one character we haven't talked about at all was Effie.
Yeah.
What did you think about, you know, it took me a minute to realize who she was,
mm-hmm.
the actress. And mm-hmm. then as soon as I put it together, I was like, oh, Avery Jessup from 30 Rock.
Mm.
Oh, she's a bitch. You know what I mean? That's one of the whole, like, because she played Alec Baldwin's his wife.
Okay. I've never watched 30 Rock, so I don't
know. Okay. But she's a heinous bitch. And so I was like, oh, this is perfect for her. You know, it's like so, but.
All right.
Why do you think, like, where was Effie from the capital?
Yes.
Or was Effie from the district? Okay, I couldn't.
She's from the capital, but District 12 is, like, her district. So every year she's the one who comes and.
Got you. Okay, I couldn't. For some reason, I didn't catch that. I didn't know if she was District 12 or if she was from the capital. I got it.
No, she's from the capital.
Okay.
Otherwise, she wouldn't have that hair and clothes and makeup.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make
but sense. I'm like, really? Does the bourgeoisie of this time end up being like
Victorian again? Yeah,
essentially, and just these gaudy makeup and hair coloring.
They actually toned it down for the movie.
Really? Because,
yeah, they toned it down. And what there's a lot of in the book, or at least what they talk about, is how they physically modify themselves. So. They would do crazy things to their faces, and it's basically just show you sort of like, and I think they sort of gone Victorian for a reason, because you sort of think like if people have like money is no object to them and they are looking for nothing but to be entertained, like what happens to them? What do they sort of turn into?
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's very much like, you know,
they're
everything
not
in the
working. They're not working for anything, so they're just having to entertain themselves.
Yes, because all the districts work for them. They don't need to work.
Right.
So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
intriguing.
With that, let's find out what we've learned about from the Hunger Games. Nothing gets someone's attention like shooting at them with an arrow. Be careful what you put in your mouth. It might kill you. Hope tis the only thing stronger than fear. A spark is fine as long as it's contained. Fake romance always brings in the ratings. Woody Harrelson is great at playing what we all think Woody Harrelson is like in real life. Mm-hmm. Effie Trinket equals frigid bitch. Look out for the genetically modified wasps. And there should be only one. A la Highlander and Thunderdome. Got it right.
Yes.
And with that, that's what we learned from the Hunger Games. And yeah, I was kind of disappointed that when the announcement says, no, there's going to be only one, that I thought it would have been great if Katniss just like pulled out one of her arrows and stabbed PETA in the head.
Okay, there's only one. Bitch. Yeah.
Oh, I can stop pretending I love you.
Right, that makes it easier for me.
Well, I really like this movie, despite my sinuses killing me and my need to pee. I was easily able to enjoy this, the entire thing. Worth seeing in the theater. We'll now check out the book.
Yeah, it's a decent film. One of the better book-to-film adaptations that I've seen. I found the book a lot more engaging, though, with a little bit more character development and obviously no shaky cam. But the movie is entertaining and well done.
I totally enjoyed 2 hours and 15 minutes of it, but that last 7 minutes, well shot and good story. But again, Katniss should have kicked his ass.
I didn't like the whole two can win if they're both from the same district. And say, fuck you. Moving on into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
The Rift! Release date, apparently, 7-7-2012. I don't know where you got that.
I got it from their website.
Oh, okay. It wasn't on IMDb, so I was like, whatever. Directed by Robert Coba, starring Eileen Gruba, James DeStefano, and Ralph Guzzo. For decades, they've been watching us, studying us. What are they? Nobody knows. Nobody but Ivan Petrenko Karkaroff. The Russian physicist started to study a phenomenon which has occurred for several decades. In 1982, he found an answer to the strange phenomenon, but before he could tell anybody, he mysteriously vanished. 30 years later, in a suburb of L.A., Dean Hollister seems to be a normal guy until strange radar anomalies appear throughout the world. All of a sudden, something starts to happen in the sky. Black rifts appear. Something is moving behind those rifts. It's watching us.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that summary, in which it sort of makes sense in the way it's written now that I know this, is that it was written by Robert Kuba, who is not, we'll just say that English is not his first language.
Right.
He's from Switzerland. And this movie seems very much like a labor of love for him. It is written by him. It is directed by him. I do believe his father is in the movie. I don't know who's financing the movie, but it's got a budget, estimated budget of about $20,000. So I guess the story for this behind this guy is when he was 19, he made a movie, won some best director award in Switzerland. So he got a lot of buzz behind that. So I guess this movie is somewhat supposedly anticipated in some circles, waiting to see what he does. I stumbled upon this trailer in the iTunes trailer app. And they had only had the one trailer at the time, and I just thought it was an interesting premise, mainly because it looked sort of, it looked kind of low budget, but not low budget. But what struck me the most is in the original teaser where you see the creature, it totally flashed me back to like the 1980s bad creature movies that, you know, I'd go to the rental store and go rent a straight to video movie of.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what is this craziness?
I agree with you.
Yeah. So I once I saw it, I'm like, I got to put this on here, especially because like, I bet you Steven's going to be like, what is this stuff? This is crazy.
Yeah. I watched both of the trailers, both of the teasers. There's two teasers on the actual, what is it? What's his production company?
It starts with a V.
Yeah, whatever it is. If you go to, the link is on the, YouTube page where this link is that we have in the show notes. But if you go to that page, there's two teasers. One of them, just kind of gives a premise. And then another one is more of like first contact, I guess. I don't know how you would call it.
I
don't know.
I was confused.
Yeah. Well, but when I watch both of them together, I feel like I kind of got a plot idea.
Okay.
Which somehow involves the sound turning people into the aliens.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Somehow. Maybe. Because there's a rift in time and space or something, you know, or some kind of something there. Because when I put two and two together, because you've got the doctor who's sitting there doing something and all of a sudden an alien comes up behind him in one of the teasers. And the other teaser, you've got this radio guy who hears it and then falls out of camera range.
Right. It looks like it's killing him.
Yeah. Maybe it turned him into the creature. I don't know. But anyway, I was like, this is two different, completely different trailers, and neither one of them give you any information whatsoever about this movie.
Right.
So I thought it was
funny that they could be like two different movies almost, because I was like, you know, the one reminded me, the one was very obviously much more creature oriented, like, oh, here's this alien.
Yeah.
The other one was more like it was talking, like, what was the name of that? Was it The Signal?
Oh, yeah.
Where everybody started going crazy and, like, killing each other because of something. Yeah. But, yeah, that's, like, I'm like, so I was like, are these actually supposed to be related? Are these the same movie? I don't get it. But, yeah, I was a little confused by that.
There's no telling. Clearly, he's not giving too much away yet. And the other part I thought was interesting was, you should, when you get a second, scroll down and look at the comments on the YouTube page.
Okay.
I just did it for no reason. There's a crazy-ass debate going on between some geekazoids on there. And all about, like, are there creatures on other planets and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, wow. And there are people chiming in going, like, y'all are too serious. they're like...
So there's like a straight up alpha nerd penis measuring contest going on YouTube?
Completely.
Awesome. Completely.
My pocket protector is bigger than your pocket protector is really going on right now. So I highly encourage you, if you need a little laughter in your life, to realize how serious these guys are with their comments. But,
all right, I'm gonna find it, because I don't think the one I looked at is actually, was this one that's released by him under his production company?
Well, I just searched for the Rift trailer and then clicked on it before I looked at your link.
All right. It's Vantis Pictures is the name of the name of the production company.
Got it.
But yeah, I'll check that out. I don't know what else to say about it.
There's some interesting backstory as to where this is coming, and so therefore, and how it's coming out. So it's interesting to see what's going to come of it, you know. But we'll see.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff?
Well, honestly, the trailer really didn't impress me at all.
Yeah.
I'm just like, ooh, another spooky trailer. Yay.
Well, and the production quality is clearly not high.
Well, no, but if, for $20,000, it's not bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
It's all right. True.
I guess I just, when I think of like this whole, like, you know, he's got $20,000 to make a movie, I totally think of like Kevin Smith. So like maybe this is going to be like the Kevin Smith of like sci-fi horror films.
He's a Swedish Kevin Smith. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Swiss.
Yes. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I just need to see more than the teasers because I think it's just too confusing right now. I think I have an idea of what's going on, but truthfully, it just looks like a made-for-sci-fi original movie. Like, mm-hmm. The beard on that guy looks awful. You know, mm-hmm. The creature looks awful. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that the creature is a little rubbery. Like I said, I'm intrigued because I want to see what a 20-year-old can do with $20,000. So.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So, but for me, it's meh. I think I'll pass. Nothing special to me.
Wah-wah.
Did we already go through our excitement, really? Okay.
Yeah, we went through backwards.
We just did it.
Okay. I didn't realize that. I think that's how bored I was of the Riff trailer. Anyways, so that's it for this week's CLO movies. Maybe next week will be a little bit more exciting with four movies we're talking about. We're going to the past, taking a look in 1981 version of Clash of the Titans. Also, in the past, we'll be taking a look at the 2010 version of Clash of the Titans. In the present, we'll be taking a look at Wrath of the Titans. So it's a Titans extravaganza, except then we're going to look at Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter in the future.
Well, there's not no sound like next like of a, the Titan.
Oh, great, but yeah, we don't
there's
know.
No next what. Of the Titan.
No. Rumor has it there will be a third one, but we don't know what that is. There's plenty of ways to contest us. Let us know what you thought of these movies and any other movies that we've talked about, or the various Titans movies, or for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, by going to our website, colmovies.com, leave a comment on our blog, or shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. We'd really love to hear your voice on the show. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Please pop up onto iTunes. Don't leave us a 5-star review until I get a new feed up. I'm actually going to just resubmit it, so that's going to take a few days. But please pop over there. And with that, any final thoughts?
I've been listening to COL. Good job. When are we officially going to move out of Alpha anytime soon?
Still waiting on Robert, and still want to make sure we're getting into it. So we're almost there though.
Okay.
You know, I have plans, and I need to figure out how to do better synopses. Anyways, but yeah, it's coming along. It's coming along. Almost there.
Sweet.
Maybe like maybe an episode or two more alphas, and then episode 155 of COL.
Oh, okay. So we're just gonna be continuing where we left off, huh?
We're gonna go back to the original numbering, and hopefully I'll have the new artwork from Robert soon.
Oh, okay, cool.
I need to check in with him. I don't remember how long I asked ago I asked him for him. But yeah. Anything else? With that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, take care of you.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst of my ever heard.
And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.
Me.
Sorry, I'm a little drugged up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, two things of Theraflu. Shot of vodka. I don't think that really helps.
Whee!
That's a cool. Wood shot.
And a woodchuck.